To begin this hour, I'm pleased to be joined by Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. Hello, Jason. Thanks for coming into the studio to join me today.
My pleasure. Always good to be here.
And the reason that Jason is here is because we are joined as well in studio by Jim Washington, the Federal Aviation Administration's Vice President of Acquisition and CAO. And thank you very much for being in studio with us today, Jim. I appreciate you taking the time to come across town and be here with us.
Yeah, certainly my pleasure, Francis.
We're here to find out. We asked you to come and talk us about getting off the high-risk list at the GAO. Start out with the basics, if you would, please. How long was your agency on the high-risk list, and why?
So at the FAA, our mission is to move the roughly 750 million passengers through the aviation system annually in both a safe and efficient manner. And a large part of that mission is focused on modernizing the system that we depend on to use automation and communication techniques and to constantly provide surveillance for the safety of those airplane movements, which is about 50,000 flights per day. So getting off the list was really a big deal for us because we had been placed in that GAO status for 14 years. Imagine, that's almost half the amount of time I've been a federal servant.
Wow.
So it is significant that we were released. We were the only federal agency that got off the high-risk list this past year. So it's a matter of pride for us, but we're cutting the partying short.
What was it that got the FAA onto that list 14 years ago, and give us some specifics about how that happened?
So we had a modernization program several years ago, which was in the tens of billions of dollars in total cost and with huge complexity. And we attempted an approach called the automation program, the advanced automation program, and it was plagued with problems, huge cost overruns, schedule delays to the point that it was canceled finally by pressure from Congress, and essentially we were placed on that higher risk list not too long after that.
And basically, you've stayed on that high risk list as you moved into the next generation air traffic control program, which is basically you fixed and now you've gotten back on track, and that's how you got off the list from GAO. And I got to ask you your reaction when you find out to one of these things. I mean, I know that it's not winning the Super Bowl, you're not going to Disneyland or anything fun like that, but I imagine that the feeling within FAA and we're within the program office was pretty exciting.
It was, although I have to admit I was one of the skeptics. The FAA administrator a year and a half ago set this as a major priority, which was to focus senior leadership and the organization as a whole on a course to get off the high-risk list. I thought that politically that this was really an expectation that probably wouldn't be realized. So initially I was a little bit on the skeptical side, even when the initial announcement came that we were about to get released. But the celebration did occur, and we had help in celebrating this by recognizing almost 80 particular individuals for their significant contributions to this. So the deputy secretary and the acting administrator participated in that recognition ceremony.
And you said this came from the top down, that the management team across the agency was mobilized to do it. Talk about that and the idea that what that means as you go further down the list, that staff sees everybody's invested in this, so it must be really, really important.
That's true, and in a large organization, folks tend to pay attention to what gets measured, and in the context of performance measurement, the senior executives in the agency essentially all understood that this was a priority on the part of all of us to make every effort possible to get off the list. So we had a significant amount of energy and resources applied to taking the specific steps that were necessary to achieve this outcome.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's interesting about the next generation air traffic control system is it's not just a system. I mean, really, it's that concept of a system of systems. It's going to affect every major airport, or in fact, probably every airport, every airline. Once you, for our listeners who maybe aren't as familiar with it, give us maybe, 20, 30 seconds, a minute of really what you're trying to do with the next gen.
So, in a word, next gen is really a focus on the transition that needs to happen, or the transformation from the ground-based system today to taking greater advantage of satellite and GPS technologies for the safe and efficient movement of aircraft throughout the system. And it predominantly puts the same data and information in front of controllers as what pilots have available, so that there's an ability to go from point A to point B in a shorter period of time and with less fuel usage.
And I know this is something that's being rolled out kind of one step at a time. Certain airports are getting certain capabilities first, then you'll expand it. And this is a huge program. I mean, just to be clear, I think GAO termed this at $36 or $38 billion over the next, 15 years until 2025 is the rollout, or something close to that?
That's true. And we're placing an even greater emphasis on what we're calling midterm improvements that we can realize from next-gen initiatives, because we've already undertaken those preliminary benefits and innovations. So between fiscal years 8 and 2013, we will focus about $5.2 billion specifically on next-gen initiatives so that we can achieve greater fuel savings and reduced emissions from aircraft that are part of accomplishing benefits in the system. But reducing delays is the focus that we want to apply first and foremost.
All right. I want to talk some more about, now that you're off the list, some of the specific steps that you're going to take. As you said before we went on the air, you're partying a little bit, but not a whole lot, because you want to make sure, you know, people are still keeping an eye on you, in particular the GAO, to make sure you stay off the list. So when we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about some of the steps you're going to take to do that. You're listening to Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest on In Depth with Francis Rose is Jim Washington, Vice President and CAO at the Federal Aviation Administration, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, talking about getting off the high-risk list with Jim Washington, the Federal Aviation Administration's Vice President of Acquisition. Mr. Washington, thanks very much for coming in to talk to us today. We're glad to have you in the studio. I keep telling people from time to time that we should record the sessions that go on during the commercials, because they're as interesting as what we talk about on the radio. I'm joined in the studio by Federal News Radio's Jason Miller. We were talking before the break about getting off the high-risk list, the mechanics of doing so. And I wondered if, before we get into what you're going to do to stay off of it, which I think is as interesting as the fact that you got off it, talk about some of the mechanics, some of the very specific steps that you took to get off the list in the first place. You mentioned that it became a really high priority at the sea level all over the agency, but give us a little bit more detail on exactly what steps you took.
Sure, I'd be glad to. As I mentioned previously, the administrator herself made this a personal priority. And so we quickly figured out that this needed to become a senior executive focus. And so we established a steering council that involved the chief acquisition officer, the CFO, the CIO, and each of our supporting staff organizations to conduct periodic reviews of progress that we made in very specific areas, to demonstrate to ourselves first and to GAO secondly that we were taking steps to not only improve our immediate performance in program management, but we were doing the things to look out ahead in terms of institutionalizing the kinds of best practices that would allow us to demonstrate continued improvement over time.
And that's an interesting concept, because it's not just putting programs into place. It's really changing the mindset of the people, Because when you say institutionalizing best practices, that doesn't just, it's one thing for you to come to me and say, you need to do it this way. It's another thing for me to make the decision internally. A, I want to be part of the team and get the job done better so that we can accomplish this goal. And B, to then actually do the performance, change the behavior. Talk about how you were successful doing that, because that can be the biggest challenge, I think.
I think there were two key approaches that we took. The first was to ask our program managers who were actively engaged in significant efforts what they would describe as best practices that have had positive results in their arena, and balance that against what we knew were techniques and approaches being used in other government and commercial organizations. We then took those best practices, reached agreement about how to describe them, and then made that part of our policy mm-hmm. and routine practice, so that yeah. the expectation has become that these principles are the way to achieve successful program performance. And mm-hmm. ultimately, that's what we're about. It's not a matter of simply establishing process and procedure to be able to get off a higher risk list, as much as it is demonstrating that we are meeting cost, schedule, and performance targets.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, what you just described, is what GAO says in Time and Again Report. I mean, as a reporter, I get the joy, and I mean that sincerely, of reading GAO reports. And we always joke kind of internally that the GAO report says, progress made, more progress needs to be made. But by institutionalizing it, by making it part of your policy, you're able to address really the challenges, the areas that GAO continually points out, says you need to fix this. Is that what you saw, kind of the end result? Is that that's how you got off the high risk list, by addressing it through policy and change in behavior?
Absolutely. In fact, GAO acknowledged that for the last 3 to 4 years now that we had demonstrated that we are achieving the kinds of results that they would expect as a basis of putting those different processes into place. So the way we generated them, and then doing the follow-up by establishing policy consistent with those practices is a huge step forward.
All right, let's talk about getting off the list the same way we talked about the history of it. And that, let's kind of give me the 30,000 foot level, to use a pun that's probably bad when I have the CAO of the FAA here. And then we'll take a break and come back and dig into the details a little bit more. What are you planning to do to make sure that you're not back on the list?
Well, essentially, we're going to institute a routine review processes that ensure us that we are meeting the mark in not just our modernization programs, but also on the next-gen front. Because the challenge for us in today's environment is making sure that we continue to modernize the legacy parts of the national airspace system while we accelerate the benefits that we can benefit from by moving to next-gen technologies on the more innovative tools that need to be brought into the system. So, by routinely addressing how we're making progress in those next-gen areas, we're going to keep that senior-level focus on relative performance and look for any early warning signs to be able to make adjustments in anticipation of improvements that are necessary.
And I imagine that governance counselor that you talked about will continue. You're going to probably expand it, because I know there's so many more agencies that are a part of the next-gen, the air traffic control program is includes not just FAA, but DOD, NOAA, and a bunch of others.
You're right. It is an interagency endeavor, and so we need to apply the lessons learned within the FAA process and expand that to our partners in the other agencies.
All right. We're going to take a break here, as I said, and come back and talk some more to Jim Washington, the Federal Aviation Administration's Vice President of Acquisition and Business Services, on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And later on this hour, we'll listen to the Telework Exchange Town Hall meeting that took place yesterday, including highlights from the National Institutes of Health Chief Information Officer Jack Jones and Rod Turk of the Patent and Trademark Office, both talking about successes at their agencies having to do with telework. That's when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. But first, more with Jim Washington after the break. We're back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. My guest is Jim Washington, the Federal Aviation Administration's Vice President of Acquisitions and Business Service. And thank you very much for being here and talking to us in person. Appreciate your time today. Before the break, we were talking about how you're going to stay off the high-risk list and some of the steps that you're taking to do that. And I'm curious for your colleagues who are at other agencies who are still there, talk a little bit about what they can take away from what you've accomplished and what you, some landmarks that you think you'll set down as you're working to stay off that somebody else can also take up.
So thank you, Francis. The three keys that I focus on are really the performance-based organization that the FAA has established, which means that we have introduced more business-like principles into our investment decision-making steps, which emphasize the need to generate a business case which demonstrates the specific return on investment that's anticipated as a result of a particular new tool or capability in the system.
Mm-hmm.
And using that as a basis for driving what does or does not make sense for us to invest our reason. Health address both the quality of the talent that we can attract to the agency and our ability to retain the talent and continually mature and develop skills along the way.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a very concerted effort that's applied to the certification steps leading to program managers, system engineers, contracting specialists, business managers, that emphasize both the experience and the formal training necessary to support the levels of responsibility that they have been assigned. So we're sure that they are bringing certain fundamental principles to those tasks.
Mm-hmm.
Third focus I'd like to emphasize is the use of earned value management, or EVM. This is a term that has generated more interest each year since I've been in this position, and we have been successful applying earned value management principles to the program management reviews in a way that allows the senior officials to understand where there needs to be some additional emphasis, greater resource application, or whatever the case might be, to make mid-course corrections whenever a program is starting to veer off course.
One of the things you mentioned about business cases, which I find fascinating, is we've heard a lot about it over the last decade or so. Write your business case, prove your mission, how this system, how this project doesn't meet your mission. But you guys seem to have taken it a step further by saying not just how it will help FAA meet its mission, but what's our return going to be? Why does it matter? Why do we care that this is important? And I think that's a key step that I thought we should definitely talk a little more about.
You're right, Jason. The importance of that is not just that we're requiring a program manager to describe those benefits, but that we focus on the fundamental mission of the agency, which is the safety and efficiency of the national airspace. If we do not have the ability to describe our expected benefits as a result of making certain investments, then that impacts the flying public, because we would potentially invest money in initiatives which would not be as beneficial as some other application.
So this ROI really is not just to you, the agency, FAA, but it's also to the general public. How is whatever you're going to do going to affect the public and make it better to fly, serve your customers?
That's correct.
One of the other things that I thought maybe we could touch upon, because we've done a lot around Next Gen and the GAO high risk list, FAA is a fascinating organization in a number of ways, but you guys are working on several other projects too. I thought maybe you could address some of the other areas you guys are focusing on.
Yeah, so in today's environment, the economy, of course, is everybody's concern related to the ability to recover from a lot of the challenges that are impacting every sector of the economy. The aviation is not unique in that regard. So we have some of the economic stimulus funds that have been assigned to FAA initiatives, and those are targeted largely at making improvements on airports in addition to safety initiatives on runways and to providing facility upgrades in terms of addressing aging power systems and that sort of infrastructure application. And, of course, those economic recovery funds have a requirement associated with them to move out and make the result of those initiatives happen in a very short time frame. So we have the added complexity of addressing those economic recovery expectations at the same time that we're pursuing other initiatives related to improving our business systems internal to the agency, a focus on cybersecurity, which is a common theme for mm-hmm. everybody today,
yeah.
and achieving greater data integrity and transparency in terms of communicating to the general public what we are investing in for new initiatives.
I want to interrupt real quick and just jump in on the Recovery Act, the stimulus spending. Are a lot of your money is going through grants to the airports or to the, I guess, the Metropolitan Transportation Councils, or I know there's a more proper term for that. Or is this something that FAA is going to potentially award through solicitations?
You're correct. The Airport Grants Program is the mechanism we utilize to accomplish improvements on airport property. So the FAA makes an investment specifically through the AIP grants, and then that allows airports to leverage that investment and use bonds and other approaches to supplement those funds that are provided federally.
Now, they just opened up a new runway in Dulles. Is that correct?
That's absolutely right.
I remember that from the last time I heard someone from FAA speak. Is there any other improvements to the Washington, D.C. area that you can address, or is it unknown right now?
Well, the Dulles Airport just also completed construction of a new tower facility, and so the combination of those two improvements is enhancing the ability to move more traffic expeditiously.